My hope is to, if we finish it today, then we'll finish the subject of Kol Adam today, the Yarei Miklat today. If not, certainly Bezrat Hashem by next week, and then we are going to move into our last unit, which is the closing chapters of Sefer Yehoshua. My guesstimate is that we should finish sometime either by the end of November or beginning of December, either 4 or 5 weeks from now. All right.
There's all this conversation.
I see that.
Sorry,
I hear that. I'm happy to wait till it all finishes, and then we'll...
We are present.
It's Monday morning. Okay, fair enough.
The time change. Blame it on that, too.
Yeah, we gained an hour, though.
I know, but I'm so
mistaken. Never works that way. Somehow it never works that way. You end up using that hour at least four times.
Yes, right. It's a real good excuse.
Mm-hmm. That's it. All right. We've spoken about the story of the cities of refuge from a number of different perspectives. We've addressed the issue of the cities themselves, their geographic location, the relationship between the cities of refuge and the cities of the Levites, and the sequence of events as they unfold in Yehoshua versus as the Torah describes the allocation of these cities in the end of Bamidbar. The last subject, sort of unit, in this discussion that we have not addressed, and I've kind of been pushing it off until the very end, is the issue which we came upon right from the beginning when we first read the verses about the goal, about the Ritzeach B'Shogeg and the cities of refuge. So I want to go back to those verses and look at them again, and then we'll try to address the problem. So we're back to chapter 20, Parakhov. Daber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. I'm just going to read the verses again so that we're all on the same page. Daber b'nei Yisrael Lemor, tnu lechem et arei hamiklat asher dibarti alechem biyad Moshe. Designate these cities of refuge as I have spoken to Moshe. And what are they for? Lanus shama rotzeach maken nefesh bishkaga bivlidat. They are designated for refuge, for escape, for somebody who is considered a manslayer, or somebody who is considered somebody who kills somebody accidentally, what is the technical term of manslaughter. V'hayu lachem lemiklat migo'el hadam. And into those cities he will escape from the wrath of the go'el hadam, from the Redeemer. The first question that we have to ask, and we're going to try to address, is the role of the Goel Hadam. Who is he? What is he? What does he do? What is this status of the Goel Hadam? That seems to indicate that if the Goel Hadam catches up with him before he gets to the city of refuge, the Goel Hadam has the right to take revenge for the death of his relative. V'nas el echat miharim ha'ela. He'll run to one of these cities. He'll tell the elders of the city what his case is. They'll gather him in, they'll give him a place, and there he will stay. And if the Goel Adam will continue to chase him, then he'll come to the city, and he'll ask for the murderer, or for the manslayer, and the people in the city, the elders, the people responsible for the city, lo yazgiru et harotzeach biyado. They will not extradite him to his hands. They will not hand him over to the Goel Hada. Ki bivlidati katra'eu, v'lo saneh oto mitmok shoshom, because he didn't do this intentionally, premeditatedly. This was an accident. And therefore he will stay in this city, v'yashav ba'ir ha'hi ad omdo lifnei ha'edah l'mishpat. He'll stay there until he comes to justice, until he stands before the Beit Din in a court, essentially determining that he belongs there, and his sentence is to remain ad mot ha'kohen ha'gadol asher yiyeh b'yimim ahem, until the death of the Kohen Gadol that will be in those days. And then after the death of the Kohen Gadol, az yeshuv ha'ratzeach uva el iro ve'el beto el ha'ir ha'shenas misham, and he shall return to the city from whence he came. So there are two issues. We've dealt with the issue of the city and its location, because that's what Yeshua, Sefer Yeshua, is about. It's about the land. But we have yet to deal with the two halachic components of the story, which are the role of the Goel Adam, and the flip side, which is, where did the Kohen Gadol fit into the picture? The strangeness of this kind of sentence, that he stays there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Both of those, both the role of the Kohen Gadol and the role of the Goel Adam, are not inventions of Yehoshua. They are excerpts, summaries, exactly, almost verbatim, from the laws of the Rotzeach B'Shogeg as they are set out in the Torah itself. If you take a quick glance at Bamidbar Lamed Hei, the first part of this perek, starting with Pasuk Tet, outlines exactly what the definition of a Rotzeach B'Shogeg is, what distinguishes a Rotzeach B'Shogeg from a Rotzeach B'Mezid, what distinguishes premeditated murder from manslaughter and negligence causing death, whatever the cases are. But then, in Pasuk Chaf, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Torah says, "V'shaftu ha'ida ben hamakeh uven goel hadam ala mishpatim ha'ela." The community, the people inside this Ir Miklat, will judge between the Goel Adam and this Rotzeach B'Shogeg over these issues. V'hitzilu ha'idat ha'rotzeach miyad Goel Adam, and they will save the Rotzeach from the hands of the Goel Adam. V'yishivu oto ha'ida el ir miklato ha'shena shama, and the Eida will bring, this community, this court, will bring him back into the city where he has run to. V'yashav ba'ad mot ha'kohen ha'gadol ha'shemashach oto b'shaman ha'kodesh, and there he shall remain until the Goel Hada, until the Kohen Gadol has died. We're jumping the gun. I want to leave the Kohen Gadol for this last piece of it. Correct. We understand the problem of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is a the death of the Kohen Gadol is a relative sentence. The Kohen Gadol can survive a year, the Kohen Gadol can survive 50 years. It's a relative, non-defined sentence. Correct. So we will come back to that issue. That's the issue of the Kohen Gadol. We'll come back to that issue as well. As far as the role of the Goel Hadam, we hear clearly the Goel Adam serves some kind of role in the very application of the justice and the court proceedings, where the Torah says v'shaftu et ha'eda, the Eda will adjudicate between the Rotzeach B'Shogeg and the Goel Hadam.
But you're saying the Kohen is still, you're saying
the court. The court. Forget the court. Forget the court. We're talking about the Goel Adam. I want to first focus on the Goel Adam, because the Goel Adam has a complex role in this story.
You're putting a lot of emphasis on the Kohen Gadol.
Forget the Kohen Gadol. We'll come back to the Kohen Gadol. Forget the Kohen Gadol for a minute.
Sure.
Leave him. Park him. We'll
Eda?
Get him back to him. The Eda is the court. The Eda is the court in this Ir Miklat. The Eda is, he gets to the Ir Miklat, and he stands before the court. In fact, you know what? It'll be easier, actually, if we read the Pesukim a little bit earlier. Starting with Pasuk Yevchet, he's talking about the alternative. What happens if this person is not a rotzeach b'shogeg, but he's a rotzeach, right? If he is a murderer, premeditated murderer, if he killed him with some kind of an iron instrument, meaning intentionally took an axe, took a sword, took a spear, v'yam rotzeachu, what's the law of a rotzeach? The law of a rotzeach is, it's a capital offense. Murder is a capital offense. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishofech. Murder is a capital offense, and he's to be executed by the courts. The courts have to take that responsibility. So the pasuk Yud Chet, or Yud Zayin actually, let's start there. Ve'im be'even. Does everybody have where I am? Pamidbar Lamed Hey. Ve'im be'even yad asher yamut b'hikau v'yamot rotzeachu mot yumat rotzeach. If he did so with some sort of a stone of a certain weight, clearly, if the evidence indicates that this was premeditated, he's a murderer, and he shall be executed. Or if you use some sort of an instrument large enough and strong enough to be considered an instrument of death, he is a murderer. Who kills him? Goel hadam hu yamit et haratzeach b'figobo hu yimitenu. The goel hadam will kill the murderer. This redeemer, this goel hadam, he will execute this individual when he meets up with him. If he had hatred in his heart and he was waiting for him, he ambushed him, or all of these cases, any time it's clear that the evidence indicates that there was murder involved, Goel Hadam yamit et haratzeach b'fig obo. The Goel Hadam will kill the Ratzeach when he meets him.
So there's no judging involved. It's just between those two individuals?
That's part of the complexity. The Torah's description is cryptic a little bit. We'll come back to that issue. But certainly, I'll come back to the question of whether there's a judgment and a process. Because I think there is. The question is, less, from my perspective, less the question of whether there's a due process involved, but what the role of the Ratzeach B'Shogeg, of the Goel Adam is. What role is he playing in this story? Once I know his role, then we can fit the pieces of the pieces together. So on the one hand, his role is to kill the Ratzeach if he catches him, assuming he is a Ratzeach, amazing. On the other hand, Pasuk of Dalet, if he did not intend to kill him, if he did not want to kill, if there was no premeditation involved, Shaftu ataida ben amakeo ben goel adam al mishpatim eile, the court will adjudicate between the one who hits, meaning the Ratzeach, and the goel adam over these matters. Right? So that's the answer in part to your question about due process. V'tzilu ha'idah taratzeach miyad goel adam v'shivu oto et ha'idah al ha'ir miklato eshena shama. The eidah, meaning the court, in this ir miklat, will save him from the hands of goel adam if he is in fact guilty only of manslaughter, and then he will stay in the ir miklato. If he leaves the ir miklat, if he leaves the boundary of the Ir Miklat during that period of time, and the Goel Adam finds him outside, Pasuk of Zayin, Goel Adam mechutz l'kvul Ir Miklato, Ratzach Goel Adam ataratzeach, and then the Goel Adam will kill the manslaughter, and Adam, he's not guilty. He is exonerated. Ki bi'ir miklato yeshev ad mot kohen gadol, because the Ratzeach is obligated to stay inside the boundary of the Ir Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol, and if he leaves, then he takes his life into his own hands. Ve'acharei mot kohen gadol yeshuv Ratzeach el eretz achuzato. And after the death of the Kohen Gadol, the Ratzeach can return to his ancestral land. If he dies first?
Or if he dies the next day.
Then there's a couple of psukim about redemption. You can't redeem him, you can't buy out the sentence. There's no bail. There's no kofar. There's no ability to pay a fine and exempt him from the period of exile that he has so decreed. That will skip for a moment.
Can I ask a question? it says in the English, it says, from the city of refuge where he had fled. So the judgment takes place
in the city of refuge. Actually, one of the sources that we looked at, I can't remember, last week or the week before, the Mishnah goes through the whole process in which he says he comes to the city of refuge, and the city of refuge they take him in, and then there's a court, and the court stands there, and they judge between the Goel Adam and the Ratzach, and if he's guilty, they hand him over to the Goel Adam. If he's not guilty, they bring him back into the city. There's a whole... The process, the question of due process is less the issue, because that can always be addressed. Whether the Torah addresses it or not, the practical application of the laws of the Ratzach, B'shogeg, as such, can always address the issue of due process. The bigger question is, what role does the Ratzach B'shogeg have? And what's interesting in this description is he plays at least three roles. And they are distinct roles. In today's society, we would separate them. We would almost never combine them. But that's because we've set up structures, judicial structures, to deal with the scenarios that the Torah is setting out, in which the Torah doesn't have those scenarios available to us. So, for example, one of the first roles of the Goel Adam, conceptually, why would the Torah even allow such a concept of the Goel Adam to exist? Why would the Torah allow a member of the family, a next of kin, to take the law into his own hands and chase down this Ratzach B'shogeg? And if he finds him before he gets to the Ir Miklat, he can kill him. And there's nothing you can do about it.
He becomes the judge and the prosecutor and all in one.
Yeah, it's a little bit unfair in a certain sense.
Doesn't seem to be.
I mean, there's certainly an element of vengeance involved, I think, in terms of the motivation of the Goel Adam. But the Torah seems to not only allow it, but seems to institutionalize it in some way. I mean, it may have been an ancient custom that the Torah simply sanctioned, but it's a bit of an oddity that there would be this concept that the Goel Adam can chase the Ratzach all the way to kingdom come. What would be the...
Find in the Torah, there's so much due process. Why in this one case?
Well, there is due process. I'm not worried about the due process. The due process is there. V'shaftu ha'eda ben Goel Adam ben ha'Ratzach. There has to be an adjudication. That's in the Torah. I'm not worried about the seemingly lack of due process, because I think the due process is there. But the Goel Adam has a different role to play, essentially. What happens when he gets to this due process? Let's talk about the Mishpat for a moment. What's the role of the Goel Adam in that process?
He has to bring evidence.
Which means that what role is the Goel Adam playing in that picture? So finally the Ratzach is painted out. The Ratzach gets to the city, and the courts take him in, and the courts say, okay, now we have to have a trial. What role does the Goel Adam play in that trial? He's the prosecutor. Which means that, essentially, remember that we don't have, in today's society, you'd have like a state prosecutor or the DA, or in Canada they had the office of the Attorney General. You don't have, in the Torah's context, you don't have a designated person whose role it is on behalf of the government or on behalf of the society to represent the society in a court trial. So who plays that role? The designated person to play that role is the individual who's most affected by the outcome or the act itself, which in this case is the relative, the next of kin, the Goel Adam, who feels the passion. So on one level, the Goel Adam plays a very simple role, which is that of the prosecutor. He brings the Ratzach B'shogeg to justice. And if he's guilty of manslaughter, so he'll get protected by the system. And if he's guilty of murder, so then he'll be dealt with accordingly. And if he's guilty of nothing more than an innocent accident, then the Goel Adam will be appeased because he'll recognize that there's no guilt involved, and he'll go home, and the Ratzach B'shogeg will go home, and everybody will be happy. That's the next piece of it. That's the third role that he plays. The third role that he plays is assuming that he's guilty, and he plays the role of the execution officer. If the courts determine that he's guilty, then he gets to take the action itself, although within the rules of the Beit Din. Can't do it any way he wants. Can't just walk up there and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, shoot you in the back. There are rules to how capital punishment was implemented. Very rarely was it actually ever implemented, in fact, but there are very strict and rigid rules, and those rules have to be adhered to, even though he's going to play a role that's entitled. The same thing, by the way, happens, assuming there's no Goel Adam, the Torah requires that the witnesses who testify in a capital crime, the witnesses themselves participate in the execution. Yad ha'edim tiyeh bo barishona. Why? What's the logic?
Make sure everybody knows or feels or understands that he's really guilty.
That's right. It's just an added element of deterrence against two witnesses being paid to come and give testimony, and they're walking away saying, well, all we had to do is give false testimony. It doesn't really impact us. We don't have to do anything about it. Suddenly they have to realize that if they're going to give false testimony, this guy's blood is going to be on their hands. And there's a whole additional level of fear that is put into the system to make sure that the witnesses are in fact legitimate.
So that's the due process.
That's all part of the due process. There's no question that there is a court, that there's a trial. I don't have to get too hung up on the due process. There's no question there's a trial. It says so explicitly. B'shaftu ha'eda. How we get to the trial, etc., is a separate issue. But there's no question that there is a trial and due process. I'm not. Concerned about
only
that.
Only if he gets to
that point,
to the city of refuge.
I think that's the assumption. I think that's the assumption, that he gets the city of refuge, and that the whole scenario is set up in order to make sure that happens. You can even go so far as to say, and it's not outlandish, that the reason why the Torah establishes the Goel Adam's role in the first place, or at least accepts it, is to ensure that there's due process. Why? Because otherwise, a guy commits accidental murder in the middle of a forest, he kills somebody, and he buries the evidence, and he goes home. What's to ensure that he gets to the Ir Miklat? What's going to guarantee that he's going to recognize that he has to now run? He killed somebody, assuming there was negligence, guilty of manslaughter. What ensures that he doesn't just bury the evidence, bury the entire scenario, hide, as more often than not happens in society today, and runs home and pretends that it never happened?
With no witnesses.
The answer is the Goel Adam. The Goel Adam doesn't care about witnesses. He's the next of kin. He doesn't care about witnesses, and he doesn't have to necessarily care about due process. He's going to go after the guy. So the guy knows, as long as the guy knows that there's a Goel Adam out there, and that therefore his own life is now in danger, he has no choice but to run to the Ir Miklat. So to a large extent, the role of the Goel Adam is a mechanism by which we ensure that this Ratzach B'Shogeg doesn't try to cover up the evidence, and in fact does end up going to the Ir Miklat so that there can be due process. Almost like, it's almost as if the Goel Adam is playing more of almost the role of the police department, where the evidence is to be investigated, the evidence points to a particular person. The Goel Adam, before he gets to the Ir Miklat, is not necessarily bound by the... That's okay. Not necessarily bound by the limitations of due process, and therefore forces the Goel Adam, forces the Ratzach B'Shogeg out of his complacency and forces him to run to the Ir Miklat. So to a large extent, the Goel Adam plays multiple roles. He is the one, he's the police department, he's the detective who determines who the evidence points to, therefore pushing the Ratzach B'Shogeg to get to the Ir Miklat. When they get there, there's an adjudication, and therefore the Goel Adam will play the role of the prosecutor. Don't forget that in the Beit Din process set up by the Torah, there's no such thing as lawyers. There are no lawyers in the Torah. Careful. There are lawyers in the in there, or lawyers or lawyers' wives in the room, and on the tape. Right? It's, when you come before Beit Din, even today, in civil cases before Beit Din doesn't try criminal cases anymore because we don't have the authority. But in civil cases that come before the Beit Din, there are no lawyers. The parties themselves state their claim to the rabbis, and the rabbis investigate it based on the rules of the Torah and the questions that the halacha requires them to ask. So the process in the mishpat here is to take evidence, bring witnesses, determine the facts. Who's going to play the role of the prosecutor? There's no lawyers, so it makes sense that the individual who did all the research and determined that the evidence points to this guy be the Goel Adam. In today's society, we split, right? Law and order. That's the famous television show. In today's society, we split the police investigative department from the justice department. The Torah doesn't have either. So it's the Goel Adam who plays that role in practical terms.
The hardest part I find is the Goel Adam is actually carries out the punishment. To me, that's...
Any witness in any Beit Din in a capital crime has to carry out the punishment. It's part of the mechanism by which they ensure the legitimacy of an additional safeguard to ensure that the evidence is legitimate. Plus the fact that that's his role. He is the next of kin. He has that right. It is his brother, or whoever it was, who was killed. So there is a certain justice there.
Well, that's vengeance.
If the court determines that he's guilty, and therefore guilty of a capital offense, guilty of a crime for which there's a death penalty, so then it's entitled.
Well, that's what he's called, right?
But we still
then
have
he's entitled.
The issue of
the Kohen Gadol.
Of the Goel Adam having the right or the freedom to cut this person down before he reaches the court.
Right.
I don't know if necessarily it was such a practical question as much as the fact that without that, you know, what's going to force him to run? If I don't put that piece into it, so what's going to force him to run to the imiklat? That comes back to the first question I asked, which is what stops him from covering up the evidence and going to bed?
So was it just basically, it's almost like a pro forma thing where the Goel Adam, you know, he knows that the Goel Adam is coming after him, so he goes to the imiklat.
I don't know how performant it is when you're in the heat and the passion of the moment, but certainly there's that fear
rests upon. If it's really not a practical matter, then the heat dissipates.
Right. No, I assume the Goel Adam is real. I'm assuming the Goel Adam is real, and therefore he needs to run. And it's not an accident that the Torah says, well, maybe six aren't enough. Let's set up another 42 cities. We don't know.
Do we know whether this was 20% of the population, 40% of the population?
I doubt it was that high. I would assume that the percentages are no less or more than the percentages are today. No, for Yerushalayim Yerakodesh. I would assume that human nature hasn't changed that much.
I know it was distance was a problem,
They couldn't travel, and you had to. The whole structure of society was a little bit different. Technology was different.
Transportation
was different. There's an interesting. I'll show you an interesting tshuva. There's a reference here. I put it down on the source page, source number one, and it's a very interesting piece because it's relatively modern. Pisre tshuva is a achron written on the Shulchan Aruch, so we're talking about the 17th century or 18th century. And he writes the following. The whole story of the Rotzeach B'Shogeg is recorded in the Shulchan Aruch, this whole discussion. And he writes, Echad sheharag baderech v'noda mi ha-Rotzeach. Somebody kills somebody along the way, and it's known. Yesh lakuf l'kravo shel ha-nirtzach shehei rodef achar ha-Rotzeach l'amido badin. We force the relative of the nirtzach, of the person who is killed, to chase after the murderer in order to bring him to court. Ki mitzvah mutelet al goel adam lamit haratzach. There's a mitzvah upon the goel adam to deal with the ratzach. V'chein nahagnu pa'amim habe, and says the Bizkachiv, so we conducted ourselves many times. V'asinu im parnaseh hador, we got together with the gabayim and all the leaders of the community. Shimamidim goalim lirdof achar haratzchim, and we would send the goel on his mission. There was a hesitancy. It's a fascinating sociological piece. The goel adam doesn't want to. It's disgusting. I should have to take the law into my own hands like a vigilante and go running after the guy and kill him. Says the Beis Din, yes, you have to do that. Why? You, the goel adam, you have to go after the near after the rotzeach. Why? Because in the absence of an appointed police detective service that can find him and bring him to justice, who's going to do that? Who's going to bring him to justice? So that role has to fall on somebody's shoulders. Therefore, the Beit Din says, we can't get to the guy. We don't know who he is. We don't know where he is. You are the goel adam. You are the relative, and therefore it's your responsibility. I don't have a police department to call on, so we'll call on you, and you go and serve as our detective agency and our police department, and you bring him to court, and you bring him to justice. So you see, they didn't send him on his way to kill him. They sent him to bring him to the din. So that's part of it. I don't think the goel adam really played the role of chief executioner along the way.
But afterwards he did.
But he certainly does afterwards. That's part of the threat. That's part of the role of the goel adam.
What if there are no relatives? Is somebody appointed?
Probably. Somebody's got to get the guy.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to bring him in. Don't forget, capital punishment went out of, if it ever existed, which is a debate in the Mishnah, it certainly didn't exist past the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, when we had a full-blown Sanhedrin. So if they're bringing him to court, they're not bringing him to court to execute him. Now, that's the Torah's terminology, but in the end, the reality is, even if he was guilty, they couldn't execute him because they didn't have the authority. So capital punishment went out of use 2,000 years ago in Jewish life. When it has or won't or will go out of vogue in the Western civilization in the 21st century still remains to be seen, but in Jewish civilization, capital punishment was gone 2,000 years ago, more, if ever. But the role of the goel adam hasn't changed. He still has to play that role of the person who goes out, finds the guy, and brings him to justice until you have a society like we have today. Pesach Chuvah didn't live in Western society, didn't live in a country in which there was a mechanism on the courts that we could rely on. And so today you can rely a little bit on the courts to, not a little bit, you can rely on the courts to find the guy, to bring him to justice and to work through the justice system. But in the context of the Torah and in the autonomous Jewish community where that doesn't exist, then that's part of the role of the goel adam, is to make sure that the guy comes to justice. All right, which brings us to our next piece, which is the piece we've really all been waiting for, anxiously with bated breath, which is the role of the Kohen Gadol. So, how does the Kohen Gadol fit into this picture? And the emphasis on the Kohen Gadol is multifaceted. In Bamidbar, he's mentioned at least two or three times, and Yehoshua is mentioned again. This guy sits in the Ir Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Question is, why? Is it fair? Is it equitable? Kohen Gadol can last. Depends how young or old the Kohen Gadol is. Depends whether we're Erev Yom Kippur and the Kohen Gadol is going to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and make it out alive. There's all kinds of factors to make life complicated. Not only that, the Mishnah, there are actually more than one Kohen Gadol in Jewish life. There's one Kohen Gadol per se, but then there are stand-ins that can take over the role of the Kohen Gadol. For example, with regards to Yom Kippur, if it gets too cold, I can change the...
I bring a blanket.
The role of the Kohen Gadol, let's say for a moment the Kohen Gadol, Erev Yom Kippur, gets sick or becomes Tameh or for whatever reason can't function as the Kohen Gadol. So they put a stand-in into the role of the Kohen Gadol for that year, Yom Kippur. Then the regular Kohen Gadol comes back. What do they do with the stand-in? So there's a halacha that says Malim v'kodesh v'lo moridin. You can only go up in Kedusha, you can't go down. So once you become Kohen Gadol,
he's
an emeritus for life. He stays Kohen Gadol. So you can have more than one Kohen Gadol. You can have a Kohen Gadol who's functioning and a Kohen Gadol who did function but is no longer functioning. Right? He's or forced to retire. Either way. But he served for a day, but he's Kohen Gadol. So there's multiple roles of individuals called Kohen Gadol. Which Kohen Gadol's death frees the Motzeach B'Shogeg from the Ir Mikvah?
It's whether it's a Kohen Gadol or the Kohen
Gadol. Right. Is it a Kohen Gadol or the Kohen Gadol? So the Mishnah says... Right. So the Mishnah says, take a look in source number 2, which is the Mishnah in Masechet Makot. Mishnah states, Echad Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishcha Ve'Echad Merubah B'Gadim Ve'Echad She'Avar M'Mishichuto Machzirin et haRotzeach. Whether there's also a period of time in which the regular anointing oil of the Kohen Gadol was no longer able to be used, so the status of the Kohen Gadol got diminished one level. So the Mishnah says that doesn't matter if he was anointed or if he wasn't anointed, as long as he's functioning as the Kohen Gadol, or as long as he did function as the Kohen Gadol. Any of the individuals who have the status title of Kohen Gadol, their death returns the Ritzach B'Shogeg from his exile. So not only is it one Kohen Gadol, it's any Kohen Gadol. You could have three or four. And the death of any one of them is going to free this Ritzach B'Shogeg. Says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Mashuach Muhammad Machzir to Ritzach. There's an additional Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol who was the military chief chaplain. The Torah says that when the army of Israel went out to war, the Kohen would speak to the people and tell them, give them a pep talk, give them rules of engagement, etc. That Kohen Gadol was also, could have been a different Kohen Gadol than in the Beis HaMikdash, and he too, he was called the Mashuach Muhammad, and he too has that status of a Kohen Gadol. Now, I've got now at least three or four different people called Kohen Gadol. All of them, the death of any one of them, will release the Kohen Gadol, the Ratzach B'Shogeg, from his exile. The end of this Mishnah is remarkable. Lefichach. Right. Lefichach, imotehen shel kohanim misapkot lehem michya v'chzut. Therefore, the mothers of these kohanim would go and look after this Ratzach B'Shogeg, bring him food, bring him clothing. They would look after him with great affection, lest this Ratzach B'Shogeg daven for the death of the Kohen Gadol. It's a remarkable statement. First of all,
it's always your mother's fault.
It's the mother. Bring the mothers into the picture. Second of all, the notion or the assumption that this Ratzach B'Shogeg could pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol, and that prayer
would be answered
and cause the premature death of the Kohen Gadol. So in order to avoid that, the mothers are going to go look after the guy so that he likes it over there in his exile. We want to make it for as comfortable for him as possible so that he doesn't want to leave lest he daven for the premature demise of the Kohen Gadol. He didn't. At first, remember that it's Ratzach B'Shogeg.
Okay, but what about all these different Kohanim we're talking about? You're not just talking about one Kohen Gadol. You've got outs in a lot of different places.
So all those mothers are going to go look after him. Absolutely. He's going to get a lot of food and a lot of clothing, and he's going to get a lot of TLC.
Yeah.
100%.
It's hard to be in a different place.
It's a remarkable set of assumptions.
Can I ask a snark?
Sure.
Why do they specifically say... it doesn't say it just for be saying it. It specifically says about the Kohen Gadol who's been appointed for war. I mean, they make it separate.
Because there's a separate designation of the Kohen Mashiach Mocham. It was a separate title, separate status.
But all the other Kohanim were just for the Beis HaMikdash. So
correct. There's the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Mashiach, it's called. So there's a Kohen Mashiach for the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, right. And there was a Kohen Mashiach for the pep talk before they were going to war, like the chief chaplain. It's a different role.
I missed it again. So why would someone be I mean, did they really retire Kohanim? In other words, that they were not fit to do the Avodah?
They could become Tameh, they could become all too old, okay. They could become, they have to be married. Okay. There's all kinds of reasons why a Kohen Gadol would no longer be able to function practically.
They have to be married. What if they're widowed? That's
they can't
service.
Be the Avodah of Yom Kippur if they're not married.
You know, you always think of, like, my mind, I always think
so the Mishnah actually says that they would appoint them, they would give them a wife before Yom Kippur. And a stand-in. Lest the wife dies before Yom Kippur. Because, God forbid, if the Kohen Gadol goes out the day before Yom Kippur, or gets invalidated the day before Yom Kippur, takes him a minimum of a week to train a new Kohen Gadol, then you'd have Yom Kippur without a Kohen Gadol. That would
and
be...
what happens if it happens on them?
Yeah, that would be a problem. Be that as it may, that's for a different discussion. So I have this Kohen Gadol. And I don't know... I've got this with Seth Meshogeg sitting in this ear miklat, supposedly waiting for the Kohen Gadol to die, and the mothers are bringing him food so that he should like it where he is. It's really remarkable. Doesn't really address the question, though, of why the Kohen Gadol? How did this Kohen Gadol get mixed into this affair? What did he do? So there's essentially two different approaches in the Mefarshim. Well, so we'll see that in a moment, whether there's blame put on him. So first of all, let's start with the two sources in Chazal, which are sources 3 and 4. Chazal had two different approaches to this question. In source number 3, you have the Sifrei. Now, a comment about the Sifrei. Tanaitic, Amoraic, Rabbinic commentary falls into two broad categories, Halacha and Agarata. So when you understand the difference between them, Halacha is Halacha, Halachic material. Agarata, Amaletic, Parshanut, Rasha, type of Musar, lessons, values, principles, but not necessarily normative, practical Halacha. When we talk about Medrash is a term we throw around a lot. But Medrash falls also into two categories. Medrash simply means the exposition on verse, on text. Drash, or lidrosh, means to expound the verse. That interpretation can be of legal nature, that interpretation can be homiletic or philosophical nature. The literature of the Medrash divides into two categories. Midrash Halacha and Midrash Agada. The Midrash Halacha is much older than the Midrash Agada. Midrash Halacha goes back to the time of the Tanaim, and it is actually predates the Mishnah. It is the foundation upon which the Mishnah was built. So you have something called Midrash Halacha. Midrash Halacha essentially is one set of books of interpretation of Midrash per Chumash. So there's a Midrash Halacha in Sefer Shmot. It's called the Mechilta. There's a Midrash Halacha in Sefer Vayikra. It's called the Sifra. There's a Midrash Halacha in Sefer Bamidbar and Dvarim each called the Sifrei. Those are works of Midrash, but they are halachic in nature, and they form the backbone of the Mishnah. When we get into the Amoraic period of the sages, the Talmud, then already we're dealing with material in the Gemara itself, which is halachic, and the non-halachic material of the sages of the Gemara were separated out into a different book sometimes, and those are called what we refer to often as the Midrash. Midrash Rabbah, Midrash Tanchuma, Psikta Rav Kahana, Psikta Zutra, Tanna Dabbe Eliyahu, whole series of works of Midrash that were collected over the years, homiletic material of the rabbis, contemporary to the period of the Talmud, but non-halachic in nature. So whenever we talk about the Midrash, it's important to distinguish whether we're talking about halachic Midrashim or a Gaddic Midrashim. We approach them very differently.
And they're coming from different periods of time.
And they are from different periods of time. The Midrash Halacha is contemporary, and it's an early contemporary to the Mishnah. And very often is the precursor to the Mishnah. Whereas Midrash Agadah dates this material from the sages of the Talmud and is actually recorded even later. So Midrash Agadah has a very different role. The quote here in source number 3 is the Sifrei. So of course the Sifrei is the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Bamidbar. And remember, and it's important to remember that it predates the Gemara. So when the Gemara addresses a discussion, we have to assume that they are familiar with the Tanaitic material of that discussion, either from the Mishnah or from the Midrash Halacha.
And the Midrash Agadah is what period?
The Midrash Agadah is the sages recorded there are the sages of the Talmud period, but the compilation is even later than the Talmud. Understand the difference between the compilation and the actual statements of the rabbis who were mentioned. Okay, source number 3. Vayashiv sham ad mot kohen gadol, says the Medrash. Why do we have this kohen gadol mixed into the picture? Rav Meir omer, lotzech mekatzer yamav shel adam, v'kohen gadol ma'arich yamav shel adam. Ein bedin, shehei mi shemekatzer yamav shel adam, lifnei mi shemarich yamav shel adam. The role of the Kohen Gadol is to extend life, bring atonement, bring forgiveness, extend life. The role of the Ritzach B'Shogeg, not the role, but the effect of the Ritzach B'Shogeg, was to shorten life. Those two are incompatible. They can't both function in society at the same time. The one who shortens life cannot stand before the one who prolongs life, therefore we take him out of society until such time as the Kohen Gadol is no longer there, and then he can return to society. Similarly, second statement, Rabbi Omer, "Vatzeach mitameh ta'aretz u'mesalekat ha'shchina," the person who commits this act of murder, and even though it's b'shogeg, but assuming that there's some negligence involved, he brings defilement to the land. He causes the divine presence to leave the land, mesalekat ha'shchina. The Kohen Gadol gorem l'shchina shetishreh la'adam ba'aretz, and the Kohen Gadol does the exact opposite. He brings the shchina down closer to the world. Those two are incompatible. I can't put the Tzech B'Shogeg into society so that he stands before the Kohen Gadol, who, because their roles are diametrically opposed. That's the first interpretation of the role of the Kohen Gadol, which looks at the relationship between the Kohen Gadol and the Tzech B'Shogeg on an almost metaphysical plane. And when I look at society as a whole, these two people are engaged in activity, or have been engaged in activity, which is diametrically opposed to each other, and they're two, it's like polar opposites. They repel each other. So as long as the Kohen Gadol is functioning, I have to take the Ritzach B'Shogeg out of society. That's the first principle. The second suggestion of our sages, which is in the Gemara in Makos and Daf Yud Aleph, which is source number 4. Amar le'ehu sabbat. The Gemara, by the way, asks exactly our question. What did the Kohen Gadol do? And the Gemara answers, Amar le'ehu sabbat mipirkei de'Rava shemieli. I heard in the name of Rava shehaya lehen levakesh rachamim al doran v'lo bikshu. Because it was their responsibility, says Rava, of the Kohanim, they're in the plural because the Mishnah says there's more than one, to pray on behalf of the generation. And they failed to do so. What are these sources trying to convey? What approach are they taking to this? And what's the difference between them?
So
really putting a lot of blame on the Kohen HaGadol because he didn't daven enough.
Which one?
Yeah.
Right. The Gemara in Makos seems to put some element of blame on the role of the Kohen Gadol. Didn't daven enough, didn't pray enough, didn't do enough. We'll come back to that issue as well. And therefore has some element of guilt involved. Therefore, the sentencing of the Ritzach B'Shogeg in some way is linked to this Kohen Gadol. And this Kohen Gadol only. What is the Gemara, what is the Sifrei saying?
That's a more generous statement.
Reflecting?
That the two are incompatible. That having a Ritzach B'Shogeg is incompatible with the existence of a Kahuna, the Kohen Gadol, because they represent opposite strains.
In other words, it's the greatness or the Kedusha, the holiness, the specialness of the Kohen Gadol that requires us to remove the Tzotzeach B'Shogeg from his presence. We can't, it's too incompatible an image. So if I were to look at these two sources from the perspective of how they looked at the Kohen Gadol and his role in this story, what I would find is that they're polar opposites of the spectrum. They're polar opposites. In other words, the Sifrei is saying that the Kohen Gadol is too great for us to be able to tolerate the Ritzach B'Shogeg in his presence. And the Gemara in Makos is saying the Kohen Gadol is too guilty for us to be able to tolerate the Ritzach B'Shogeg in his presence. Do you see the difference? They're completely opposing views. Not only that, the Sifrei may address the question of why, if it's to whatever extent we understand it, why the Tzech B'Shogeg can't exist in the presence of the Kohen Gadol, but it doesn't explain why he can exist in the presence of the next Kohen Gadol. It doesn't explain why when the Kohen Gadol dies, I let him go. So, and if it's 3 days later, so the same Tzech B'Shogeg 3 days later is going to stand in the presence of the next Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur. Whereas according to the Gemara in Makos, I understand why it's dafka this Kohen Gadol and not the next one. Because the connection has some level of guilt associated with this particular Kohen Gadol in his inability to pray properly or lack of prayer on behalf of the community. And the Mefarshim split. The Mefarshim do exactly the same issue. They bifurcate over, they divide up over these two approaches of the Sifrei and the Gemara and Makos. So, for example, Rashi quotes both. How it's in source number 5, he quotes the Gemara in the Sifrei. Shehu ba la shot shchina b'Yisrael l'harich imehem v'aratzeach ba l'salekat ha-shchina m'Yisrael l'mekatzeret yimei chayehem. Quotes the Sifrei almost verbatim. One is trying to shorten life, the other is trying to prolong it. Davar acher l'fishayal l'kohen gadol l'itpalel shalot taret ha-kalal l'zuli Yisrael b'chayav. Because it was his responsibility to pray. Rashi understood that these are two answers given in Chazal, but they're very different. They're incompatible with each other to an extent. So he offers both possible interpretations as a devar acher.
But the one similarity is that there's some blame put on the Kohen.
Not in the Sifrei. Sifrei doesn't blame the Kohen Gadol at all. In the Gemara in Makos does. That's not a blame, that's a recognition of the role of the Kohen Gadol. The role of the Kohen Gadol is to bring the Shekhinah into the world. The role of the Kohen Gadol is to prolong life. The role of the Kohen Gadol is to bring purity into the world. This Ritzach B'Shogeg is violating everything the Kohen Gadol stands for. Take him out and put him into exile because he's acting in exact opposite to what the Kohen Gadol represents. That's not a blame the Kohen Gadol. On the contrary, that's to elevate the Kohen Gadol and put him on a pedestal as the role model to which all of the rest of society has to emulate and adhere to. And if somebody is in direct violation of that model, then they get removed from society. The Kohen Gadol becomes the top of that pedestal. In the Gemara and Makos, it's the exact opposite. There's some level, although be it subtle, not holding the Kohen Gadol to court and not bringing him to the court and saying, okay, we're going to hold you accountable, but on some almost metaphysical, subtle, deep spiritual level, the Kohen Gadol or the spiritual leadership of the generation does have some element of accountability. The Rambam, he is the chief rationalist amongst the Mefarshim. The Rambam took this idea one step further. The Rambam, I think, partially because I think he was unsatisfied with the notion of some sort of a esoteric, metaphysical level of accountability, brings it down to a much more, almost a psychological accountability. Take a look at source number 7. Amnam hayot ratzach bishkaga gola. This, the reason why this ratzach bishogeg, this murderer, or manslayer is a better translation for it, goes into exile, hu lehashkit nefesh goel hadam. Remember that the reason why we send him into exile in the first place is in order to calm the blood of the goel hadam. In other words, you shouldn't have to see the person who caused his pain and his anguish. We remove him from society so the goel hadam doesn't have access to it. The return of this exile to society is dependent upon, or is time connected to, the death of the individual, the Kohen Gadol, who is perceived to be, in the eyes of all, the Ahuv Mikol Kol Yisrael, the Nechbad Bivnei Adam, the most respected, the most revered, the most loved of all people. It's hard for us to understand, really, the role of the Kohen Gadol, but Lahavdil, compare it to today's society, the role of the Pope and the relationship to the Pope, the image that the Pope has in the hearts of his followers. There is a certain passion and connection to the spiritual leader, which in today's society, amongst our own people, we don't have, for reasons, for better or for worse, we don't have. But you still see it a little bit, for example, in some of the followers of when you have the Gedolei Yisrael, the real Gedolim of the Gedolim, when Moshe Feinstein died, and the whole world came out to participate in his funeral, or when Soloveitchik was nifter, or when some of the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael. When you have somebody who represents the totality of the spiritual dreams, aspirations of the entire society, their life interconnects on a very deep and emotional level to every person in that society. And so the Kohen Gadol served in exactly that role. He was to them in that generation what to us the Gedolei Yisrael would be in our generation. That person who we look up to, we see as the spiritual center of our universe, who we turn to for shilas and for advice, not just the Kohen Edyot, but really the top of the echelon. It's not blame. Wait. The Rambam hasn't talked about blame. 1 second. See what the Rambam does. It's a remarkable insight into the psychology of human beings. So the death of this Kohen Gadol is a catalyst. Why? Shebazeh tanuach dat ha-goel asher neherag kovo. Because his death, the Kohen Gadol's death, will calm the passion of the hatred of the blood of the Goel Adam. Why? Shezeh inyan tivi la'adam. Because that's human nature. Kol mi shetikreu tzara. Somebody had a terrible tragedy happen to them. Kishetavok gam ken lezulato kayotzeba. When he feels that his neighbor or his community is sharing in a similar depth of tragedy, or even greater, he'll in some way take some level of comfort for his own tragedy. There's no greater tragedy for the society, for the community, than the death of the Kohen Gadol. So that moment, when the Kohen Gadol dies, and the entire community of Israel comes out to mourn, and to grieve, and to participate in a state funeral, and the entire mourning process that overwhelms the entire society, suddenly this Goel Adam, it's like pouring cold water over him. So he's going to take out his vengeance on poor Yankel who's sitting in the Ir Miklat because his second cousin was killed. Kohen Gadol just died. So the whole mourning process of the people of Israel kind of sets almost like a dose of cold water poured over the whole over all society. Everything gets put into perspective, and the Goel Adam is no longer functioning in the heat of the moment and the anger. And at that point, it's safe to let the Tzeach B'Shogeg out. That's the Rambam's take on it. It's a complete 180-degree turn from the way the Gemara is. So the Gemara sees the issue related somehow to the functionality of the Kohen Gadol. The Rambam sees it in exact opposite. He sees it as the impact that the death of the Kohen Gadol has on society as a whole, and therefore the no longer have the need to keep this Ritzach B'Shogeg locked up and safe from protected. It's basically a form of witness protection program. It's a sophisticated form of the witness protection program, which the Rambam says, after the death of Kohen Gadol, I don't need it, because everybody sobers up and puts life in perspective. How accurate it is, I don't know, but I think the insight psychologically into human nature that the Rambam portrays in this interpretation is really quite remarkable. Somebody had raised their hand with a question. Yeah.
In the Miklat, when the Rotzeach was there, was he able to function as a regular member of the community, or
Well, he can function to the extent that he can function if he doesn't have land. And he has no source of parnassa, so the community has to support him. He can get a job if he can get a job of some kind, if he can, within the confines of the Ir Miklat. But in an agricultural society, that's hard. So he'll end up being...
That would be another reason why they would need so many, because how many of these people could each city support?
Possibly.
Did they have any rights? Could they marry? Could they...
Well, they more often than not, they were married. If they were married, they had...
But they couldn't bring their families.
No. They couldn't bring their families to the Ir Miklat. So it was a sentence. Whether it was a 2-year sentence, or a 5-year sentence, or a 10-year sentence, or a life sentence, it was relative. And it's true. It does create a certain imbalance of... or a certain amount of injustice in terms of inequity in the justice of the Ritzach B'Shogeg, assuming we're looking at the Ritzach B'Shogeg as a form of justice, as a form of punishment. What the Rambam is suggesting, and I think it's very powerful, is that the fact that we put him into exile is not because we are punishing him, but because we are protecting him for as long as that protection is needed. In theory, according to the Rambam, if there was some other reason for the protection no longer being needed, we could let him go. But the most potent example would be the death of the Kohen Gadol. So it's a complete turnaround of our whole approach to what the Ritzach B'Shogeg is.
I'm not asking this from a feminist point of view, but did this ever happen to women?
I don't think it would make any difference. The court dealt with... the court would deal with it from a judicial point of view, not from a male-female perspective. The only other piece of it is this issue of the inequity and the length of the sentence assuming I look at it as a punishment and not as a protection. And the only way around that really is to assume some level of divine involvement in this judicial process. And the truth is the Gemara assumes that is the case from the word go. I showed you a couple of weeks ago the passage of the Gemara where the Gemara talks about what happens if you have one murderer who committed murder without witnesses but premeditated, and another person who committed who killed somebody accidentally but also without witnesses. So I have two people, both who committed murder, neither one is going to get the justice they deserve. So the Gemara says, you have it here again if you want in source number 8, the Gemara says that God will arrange for those two to find themselves in an inn or a hotel at the same time. One is climbing a ladder and the other is underneath the ladder and he'll fall and he'll kill him by accident, so the person who committed murder will get killed and the person who committed accidental murder will end up going into exile. What the Gemara is essentially saying is that you have to assume some level of divine providence and hashgacha in this whole operation in the first place. And therefore, on some sort of subtle level, one can assume that that same divine providence is operating in terms of the length of the sentence given to the Tzef B'Shogeg, assuming it's some sort of a punishment in the first place as well. So that's another possible approach to the issue. Which leaves us with really four completely, radically different approaches to the relationship of the Kohen Gadol to this story. Right. The Sifrei who says that this is just too holy for the Tzech B'Shogeg to stand in his presence, take him out of society. The Gemara in Marcus, which says that there's some subtle amount of accountability in that on behalf of the Kohen Gadol, who should have done more to bring atonement, should have done more to pray, should have done more to educate a society so that these kinds of things don't happen. Possibly, I mean, there's no way to translate it into practical halachic terms, but I think there is a notion that the parnasei hador, or the tzaddikim hador, are held accountable for the transgressions of the generation. But that's not a concept that is translated into, okay, now we, the members of the society, can lay blame at the feet of the tzaddikim because Gemara says that they're to blame for our sins, right? We're not dealing with a vicarious accountability. That's not in our religious system. Others maybe, but not ours. But there is a notion of some level of accountability, mitat tzaddikim mechaper, etc. There is some notion of to the extent that we have within our ability to be mochiach, or to change, or to inspire or to motivate, and we fail to do so. So there's some level of accountability there. And then the other extremes are the assumption that this is by divine decree, the length of the sentence, assuming that God is involved in that process from the beginning. And of course, the Rambam, who I actually have a personal affinity for in terms of this story, the Rambam I think is just a remarkable turnaround. It's like looking at a story that nobody can get their head around and turning it 180 degrees so that there's suddenly a whole new way of looking at the picture. Instead of looking at the Goel Adam as going into exile because he's being punished, and then we have to figure out how long this punishment goes for and why it's linked to the Kohen Gadol, he looked at it as from the perspective of the protection from the Goel Adam. And at what point does that protection no longer become necessary? And the answer being, when the Goel Adam feels that his personal loss is no longer the issue of the hour. And now we've elevated, unfortunately, the entire level of mourning to a national scale. So then at that point you can assume that the Ritzaf can be let free. Which is really quite a remarkable piece when you think about it. By all means. I mean, we have 2 more minutes now if you want to ask a question, but I certainly can. What did you...
No, I think it's a fascinating reading on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the antithesis.
It's 180 degrees from where the Gemara and where Rashi is at, correct.
But you certainly look at it differently from those vantage points.
Right. And that's the beauty of Parshanut, of Ra, is that the end result is the same. The question of how we approach it So do we approach it with preconceived pictures or images or assumptions? And at what point are we able to reframe our understanding by freeing ourselves of those preconceived assumptions? That's the power of parshanut, that we're able to do that. Okay, we will conclude here, Bezrat Hashem, next week. If you'd like, we're happy to open up with the Rambam. If not, we will, this one more tiny little piece, two verses at the end of chapter 21 that we haven't addressed. It will take us a few minutes, and then we are going to start our next discussion, next unit, which is the last chapter of, last two chapters of the Sefer.